Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, I have one of my very special friends and favorite authors, Betsy Lewis, on today, and we are going to be talking about her new book, The Mystic Revelations of Seven. Sorry about that. Mystic Revelations of Seven, Sacred Numerology. Betsy Lewis is an author, radio personality, and Earth Mysteries Investigator. At 8 months old, Betsy and her parents encountered a UFO in northern Idaho and may have been abducted by aliens. This began a lifetime of inexplicable experiences for her. For over 40 years, Betsy has investigated UFOs, cattle mutilations, ancient petroglyphs, and ancient civilizations from the Northwest to Central America, as well as other Earth mysteries. She was a keynote speaker at the 2013 UFO conference near Las Vegas and has been a featured guest on radio programs such as Coast to Coast, AM with George Norrie, Ground Zero, K-Talk's The Fringe, Fade to Black, and other popular radio shows like this one. You can find out more about Betsy by visiting her website, which is www.betsylewis.com. And I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Betsy to the show. Good day, Betsy.
Hi, Robert. Great to be on your show again. I love to be on your show. You're one of
the
best.
Oh, I so appreciate that. Yeah, you know, every time that we speak, I always end the hour a lot more informed and also a lot more curious. So those are some very good things.
I probably confuse a lot of people because I write about so many different subjects. They're going, what?
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, though, with that is, you know, there is a common thread, really, you know, among it, and that's just really the unexplained or the unknown or the mystical or sacred. So there is that thread, though it's very, very wide, a very wide berth that you cover.
Well, I've always been like that since a child. I think I drove my parents crazy. I was always asking why this, why that. So I was very inquisitive, and I still am. You know, I want answers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that's the one thing I think, you know, there is that period, I think it's around twos, maybe threes, that the kids tend to have that why, you know. I remember, you know, my nieces and nephews were in there in that phase. I was like, can you stop asking why?
Right, you know? Right.
But then, you know, it's funny because some of the questions, you know, you have to pause and ponder because it's like, well, you know, I don't know the answer to that one. I might need to find that out so I can tell you.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So, well, exactly. Okay, so last time you were on the show, we talked about your book, The Revelations of 13, the number 13.
Right.
And so now we're going to be talking about the Mystic Revelations of 7. So
yes.
as a numerologist, you discovered about the power of the number 7.
In fact,
that it also appears in the Bible over 700 times. So can you talk a little bit about the power of that number?
Sure, absolutely. And this year is 2017, so, you know, that 7 on the end, that's going to make a lot of changes going on in our planet. There's just 7 represents the divine vibration. It is the enlightened power of the chakra energies. It's, you know, a lot of people are very superstitious. They think if you break a mirror, you have 7 years bad luck. You've probably heard that. People who go to the casinos believe it's very lucky to get 7s. Seven is a prime number, which means that this number has no divisors other than itself. And you've probably even heard the expression seventh heaven. And what I found is that Greek philosopher and mathematician Pythagoras, who lived from 570 C to 495 BC before Christ, believed that seven was a magical number and that was somehow connected to elements and the spheres. And he believed it had vibrations. He believed it had a soul. And he was just amazing. And what I've found, and we all know that everything is made up of atoms and molecules, right? Everything vibrates. And, you know, that's the same with numbers, any kind of numbers. They vibrate. They have a power all to their own. And I believe that there are many people that are engaged in some dark things right now that use numbers to create events right now. And we're seeing a lot of this darkness in the world right now, worldwide, right?
Yeah. You know, as a matter of fact, you talked about that, you know, making those. You know, one of the things talked about in the book was the idea of a prime event, you know, and you mentioned 9/11 and how a prime event can factor into, you know, shifts of predictions and that kind of thing. So, as soon as I read that, the first thing that I thought about was, you know, the ability of these nefarious characters to coordinate and implement a prime event to achieve their ends. And, you know, and of course, there are many conspiracy theories, but it seems like, you know, that the effect of a prime event can't be denied.
Right. You know, like 9/11, all the 11 things, the two towers represented 11. I don't think that was really any coincidence. There was just too many coincidences, and I don't believe in coincidences because when things start happening over and over, there has to be some reason for it. Some logical, you know, reason that all these things are falling into place. And, you know, we've seen with the number 13, for instance, the Pope. The Pope is really connected to number 13. He was, when he was elected, he was 76 years old, which equals 13. He was elected on March 13th of 2013. And there's just so many things. He chose the name Francis of Assisi. St. Francis was a 13th century saint. So there's no coincidence there. There's just too many 13s. He must know about numerology and the power of numerology.
Yeah. Well, now, a lot of times the events that we experience, like his election to being a pope and Francis being 13th century, a lot of those things really aren't, the individual really can't manufacture. I mean, there are things that we can do. I can search out a house. If I'm looking for a new home, I can search out one that has 13 in it, you know, if I'm really, you know, anxious and that kind of thing. But there are certain times that, you know, the numbers are just kind of beyond our control, so to speak. So do you think that when that happens, that it's kind of like a divined in a way, that that's a path that we follow?
Well, sometimes I think we draw these things to us. I do a lot of readings, psychic readings for people, and I have found that certain people with their names, if they equal eight, now eight's for the Chinese believe that the number eight is a wonderful number. But I have found that people with number eight, if you were born on the eighth, if your name equals eight, that you have a kind of karma to your life. And certain things just go wrong. These people that I've read for, it's like this little dark cloud, like Linus and Peanuts. They're, you know, it's like raining on their head all the time. There's just bad things that happen. And I think that's the vibration of eight that actually causes that. And I looked at yours, Robert, your name, Robert Sharp, and you are a number one, which is very good. Very lucky. Let me find out. I was going to tell you exactly what it means. You'll like that. Let me see. I know I wrote this down here somewhere for you. Where'd it go? Number one. I will tell you right now. Number one is a great number. It means that... that you have willpower, you're inventive, pioneering, creative, proud, courageous, strength, inner ability, imaginative, and you have strong opinions, and you're very decisive and confident. So that's a great number to have.
You know, that fits perfectly.
There you go.
You're right, you may be arguing
yes.
this either. But, you know, well, this is, you know, this is interesting. I have a question, because one of the things you talk about is, you know, the fact that names have the numbers and the vibrations. And before I started the show 6 years ago, I noticed that there were some people. Now, for most of my life, I went by Bob. You know, everybody called me Bob, or, you know, that kind of thing. On a rare occasion, there might have been a Robert, but, you know, that was usually the mother and disciplinary kinds of ways.
Right.
But when probably about 2 or 3 years before I started the show, probably right around 2000, I noticed that now my partner, Roy, always introduces me as Bob. You know, it's Bob, 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 Bob. So, but there are certain people that he will introduce and continually say Bob, but when they talk to me or about me, it's always Robert. And you know, and on a rare occasion, I have you know, someone who, like a guest, you know, all my correspondence for the show goes out as Robert, and on occasion there will be a guest who, you know, say Bob, which is fine, you know. But what I noticed was is that the conversations, because I looked at the people who called me Robert, because that was distinctive. And what I found out was my conversations with those people tended to be very philosophical, very, you know, they were very inquisitive, curious. I mean, it was like a different level, you know, that people were talking to me about. So when it came time to launch the show, I thought, you know, I like that vibration. So from when I launched the show, I'm going to just do it as Robert. You know, I mean, that's, you know. And now, 6 years later, there are many-fold number of people who know me as Robert than Bob, you know. And it's funny because I think I've shifted my energy to be in that Robert energy. And
right.
So now when people change their names, you know,
yes.
I know one person really just hates it when people change their names, you know. It's like, I know who you are, you know, your uncle changing your name to, you know, Aurora, you know, whatever.
Right.
But so when they change their name, that seems to me that the one of the benefits of doing that is projecting a particular energy, a persona.
Yes.
And yeah, and you know, once I realized that, I kind of, you know, it's like people can go by whatever name that they want, you know. I have a guy named Shiv, S-H-I-V, on my show later in the month. It's like, okay, you know, whatever.
Sure.
Whatever.
Well, you know, but I think people, when they name their babies, should absolutely know what the name means. I would tell them not to name a child under K unless you want them to have a lot of karma in their life. And also, and also, you know, look up their numerology and what it's going to equal. It's going to make a big change. And people can change their lives, and I've seen it. A lot of celebrities that have, like, the fame factor, we'll say, like, Marilyn Monroe, the MM, you've got two things going on there which give you more power. But look and see what your numerology would be, I tell people. And it's very easy to figure out, you know, just number 1 through 9 and then start doing the alphabet under it, you know, until you get to the very end, you know, XYZ, you know, at the very bottom, and you'll figure out and just total up the numbers that are in your name. And then you can go to the internet and actually find out what your name number would be.
Yeah. Now, do you think for parents that it would be beneficial to wait until the child arrives and maybe kind of get the energy of the child before? You know, because
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, sure, Robert. I think so. It, some people have dreams about their baby's names, and they should use that. Absolutely. The baby is telling them, I want this vibration when I come in. And not only is numerology a vibration, but the planets, too, in astrology, they affect us, too, when we come in. That's very big. So we have a lot of things going on when we come in, and I think we chose to come in at a certain time when the vibrations are best for us to learn many lessons.
Yeah. Now, in the Mystic Revelations of Seven, you spend a bit of time in the beginning of the book talking about the Greek philosopher and mathematician Pythagoras.
Yes.
And I found it really interesting, some of the things that you wrote about with him, and also his life paralleling Jesus. Can you kind of share a little bit of, for those who may not know, other than the Pythagorean theorem from school,
yes,
you know, who he was?
Yeah, he was amazing. Well, supposedly, the people of the time thought of him as a god, and he was immortal, really, in mortal form. He stood 6 foot tall and supposedly had a perfect body and a very impressive face. So someone being 6 foot tall back then was really impressive anyway. And he was supposed to have been born in the same type of area where Jesus was born. He was born in Syria. And both the men were born to parents who were journeying away from home, which is kind of interesting. And Pythagoras was he traveled through Greece, Egypt, Phoenicia, Syria, Babylon, Medea, Persia, where he learned sacred knowledge. And there are many people that have researched Jesus during the missing years, and supposedly he went to these places to learn sacred knowledge. So there's that.
Yeah.
Pythagoras founded the religious philosophical society called the Pythagorean school, which is kind of interesting. That's a real interesting school in what he was doing. But there's a lot of mythology about him, too. So it was handed down for at least over 2,000 years. So we don't know what is truth and what is legend. You know how a lot of legends, they start out as minnows
right.
and they become whales, you know?
Right, so, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now,
right.
Wasn't he supposed to be the son of Apollo? Was
yes.
that also? Yeah.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah, I find that interesting. And then, the one thing I had to chuckle with was when you indicate that when he was 60, he married one of his pupils and died, of course, when he was about 100, but he was fertile.
Yes, he did. Yeah. And if that's true, he lived to be 100. Now, there's many, many theories about his death. Some say that his enemies burned him alive. They captured him and burned him alive. There's just many things that, you know, how he died. So we don't really know for sure. There's just too many stories out there. But he was an amazing man, and he was so far ahead of his time. What he was doing was he is credited for the discovery of the relationship between sound and numbers. There is a story that after he passed a forge, he noticed that there were 4 different sized anvils that produced different notes when struck with a hammer. And he later suspended four weights of the same proportions on a string and discovered that he could reproduce the same four notes that he obtained from the anvils. This showed him that notes were expressed numerologically. There we go.
Numerologically.
Yeah, it's a big word here. He envisioned that the universe as a harmonious whole and believed that everything in it emitted sound or vibration. So he even viewed the Earth and the planets as globes orbiting a central luminary, which is the sun.
Yeah.
And isn't that incredible? That was so far ahead of his time. That's really incredible that he knew that. He followed the discovery of strings in different lengths and produced different notes when plucked. He theorized that each planet also had a note of its own, which depended upon the distance from the center, which is interesting. You know, many people have said that even planets have their own vibration. So he put vibration and the spheres and everything together, musical notes with the vibration. He knew that everything had vibration, which is really interesting. And that's what I've been taught by Native Americans, that everything has a vibration. Everything has a consciousness in this world. And that's something that we've all forgotten, that, you know, plants and animals all have a vibration. They have a consciousness. They are sentient in many ways. You know, Native Americans believe that if you talk to a tree, if you talk to a plant, they would grow bigger and stronger. And, you know, we've forgotten all that.
Mm-hmm.
We have, Robert. Yeah. We're just, we're,
I read the book about the secret life of plants, you know, and the connection with you know, the effect, like of cutting one plant next to another one, and the support of the other one. But with sound, I mean, it seems now with our advanced telescopes that we're able to hear, you know, various planets and stars. So I mean, that just again adds support to that vibrational sound.
You know, when you think about Dr. Emoto, the Japanese scientist that was actually experimenting with water crystals, and he found that when people prayed over water crystals and sent them positive energy, they turned into beautiful, perfect crystals. But if people thought negative thoughts, those crystals became really deformed and uneven and not the beauty like, you know, the positive ones. So that shows that everything is there in thinking. And I can tell you one experiment that you can do. If you have a lawn out there, any of you have a lawn, you probably have dandelions, right? You're going to laugh at this.
Many.
Robert. But you know how dandelions can always tuck their little heads down when you mow the lawn, right?
Oh, yeah.
But you know that if they're growing in a field somewhere, they get very tall, very tall. But they don't grow that tall in your yard. They already know that the lawnmower is going to try and get them, right? Talk about smart, right?
Really? Stunted growth. Well, you know, that's just really interesting. You know, with the water and Emoto, I had a guest on my show, Melania, not the other one, but she's from Honduras, and she, you know, was going through a particularly trying time, and so what she did after, you know, reading all about you know, the water studies and that kind of thing, she ended up getting 7 containers to put water in, and wrote various words like joy, gratitude, you know, that kind of happiness on them. And, you know, it would, number one, remind her to hydrate, but also the fact that it was, she felt, sending the message to the water inside, vibrate to that particular emotion, and then I'll drink you up.
Wow. Isn't that interesting?
So anyway, that's something for people out there if they want to. one of the things that we're going to take a break shortly, but before we do, one of the things, you kind of mentioned, some of the positive and the negative aspects of numbers and frequency and vibration. Is there, with numbers, like many other things in life, a positive and negative toward it? Like you mentioned, for me, one was my number, and all of those attributes do fit me, but there's a downside to some of them. That creativity, if stifled, can make me very angry. I'm just wondering, with numbers, is there like the positive and the negative side to each one? Do I have you there?
Sorry, Robert, I think I hit a switch here. I'm sorry. Yes, there is positive and negative, and you're so right about it. Everything has a positive, negative. That's the kind of world and reality that we live in, that it's all positive, negative. It's, the yin, the yang. Everything is opposites here in this world. So, yes, there is. And I didn't read the negatives to you. I read only the good things to you, but there
are negatives.
And I was going to say that, we can choose to be what we want to be. We all have negative traits that we want to work on. We're here to learn to get past, and everybody is like that. No one is different. So yes, it does. And I was going to say some of the other things about seven. There's seven colors to the rainbow, and when you combine all those numbers, you get pure white light. And there are seven continents in the world. Nitrogen has the atomic number seven. And, of course, everything in the Bible. And I think one of the greatest things is Joshua in the Bible, who actually brought down the walls of Jericho. He and his army marched around the great city seven times, supposedly with the Ark of the Covenant, and they had their horns, and they brought down that city with resonance, with vibration.
Wow. Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
It is. It's amazing. The things that we learn about vibration. I know one of my friends in L.A. has recently been utilizing sound therapy for some issues, and she just loves it. She's gotten results with that other either conventional medicine, Western medicine, and even some alternative therapies did not get the results. So it's certainly something to be looked at, I think, when it comes to its healing properties.
Yes, absolutely. Well, another thing there, like you were bringing up, there is the positive and the negative about vibrations. Very high vibrations are good, but low vibrations can cause major problems. And even Tesla found that out. He believed that he could split the Earth in half with his experiments. He was already using incredible energy. But, I'll give you an example of low energy and low vibration. There was an incident that happened November 7th of 1940 on the George Washington Bridge in Washington State. And there were 40-mile-an-hour winds that day. And they had already nicknamed the bridge Galloping Gertie because it was known to move vertically in windy conditions. And it actually collapsed that day. It got going so incredibly. It was like undulating. It was just incredible. And the whole thing collapsed. And so from that day on, engineers realized what, vibration can do, low vibration. And they called it elementary force resonance. That's what they call it. And had to redesign a lot of the world's great long span bridges since
My goodness.
Time.
crazy.
Yeah.
Well, we're a little past halfway through, so I want to take just a quick break. And
okay.
Then when we come back, I'd like to talk about Malaysian Flight 370 and your view of that and the number 7, okay?
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there. Or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Betsy Lewis, and we're talking about her newest book, Mystic Revelations of 7, Sacred Numerology. You can find out more about this book as well as Betsy's other books and services by visiting her website, which is BetsyLewis.com, and that's BetsyLewis.com. Lewis.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. Okay, so that we're back. Betsy?
Yes, hi.
All right. Okay, so one of the most greatest mysteries that we kind of our time right now, aviation mysteries, is that Malaysian Flight 370 that disappeared on March 7th. So can you maybe tell us a little bit about what your theory is about that and maybe how number 7 is connected to it?
Yes, absolutely. Well, what's really strange is my birthday is 3-7, March 7th, and Malaysian Flight 370, of course, has the 7 in it. And I think it's one of the greatest mysteries of all time in commercial airline crashes or disappearances. The flight actually vanished in some time zones on March 7th, which makes it even stranger. And other ones, it was March, actually going into March 8th. But there's just too many coincidences about the missing flight. And, of course, it was a Boeing 777. There's all those sevens. It left the radar. It actually vanished at 370 kilometers with 239 souls. And, of course, it vanished. They claimed that there were some parts they found. It was kind of nebulous when they, you know, said that they had found some parts, what was it, last year. But they didn't find anything else. And what's really strange about that is that life jackets and other materials from the plane are buoyant and should have been spotted in the ocean, but they weren't. Why not? Isn't that totally bizarre?
That's a good question. Right.
Yeah. And, of course, there are theories that range from hijacking, aliens abducting the whole plane, laser technology downing the plane. It was kidnapped and taken to a certain place. There is the phantom phone theory that people that lost loved ones on this flight claim that they can actually call their cell phone and it rings, which is really strange.
Weird.
I don't know if, yeah. And, you know, it just vanished.
Yeah.
know, there's just too many weird things. I think there was something really strange about it, too. There's just too many things, like I said. So we don't really know what happened. But I think that there was some kind of planned event. I don't know why the black box wasn't recovered. It should have been heard for at least, you know, or found within 30 days, and that's when it stops. The beacon.
Right.
So why all these things? There's just too many whys. Why didn't they find anything? And, you know, and who was on board that maybe, you know, it was taken? What really I think about is that many planes have disappeared when UFOs are around. We know that military have gone after UFOs and vanished. There's a story about a pilot, I think this is a pilot that was flying somewhere in Australia off the coast, and he kept saying that there was a UFO following him, and pretty soon he vanished, and there was absolutely nothing. They never found any wreckage. They didn't find anything. So, you know, there's that. I know it sounds kind of far-fetched, but maybe not.
Well, I mean, it's the one thing that I learned. My college degree was in psychology, and statistics was one of my, believe it or not, favorite kind of topics. And you know, part of that is that, you know, if something is statistically significant, meaning that there is that the odds of it happening are just so far out of the realm of normality, then there is something else to look at. And so whenever I see, you know, examples like this, you know, and look at the number of coincidences, well, that's what even got me opened up to the metaphysics was my partner was doing reading, and he was doing a reading for a friend of mine, and I just met him the week before in 89, and he came up to where I lived in Long Beach and did a reading for a friend of mine, and I was like, oh God, I don't know if this is working, you know, who is this? But I opened up the door to see if they wanted something to drink. All of a sudden I heard, how the hell did you know that? I laughed. And afterwards my friend told me that there was literally no one, not even her mother, she had told about a particular event that Roy brought up that had a major impact on her life to this day. And so she was sold, you know, from that point on. You know, and that's when it's like, okay, now, let me think about that. You know, let me see exactly what that is. And that's kind of started me on my little metaphysical daunt. Like Malaysian flight, you know, when there's so many coincidences or unanswered questions that defy logic, it just makes you wonder what was behind it.
Well, you know what Occam's razor is, right? Have you heard that?
Yes.
Yes. Well, you know, there's two possible answers. You go for the simplest, and that makes sense because we always try and complicate things. When it's right in front of our face, you know, it's the simplest answer. And I think we sometimes need to go with Occam's razor.
And at times it means us going out of our box, kind of suspending beliefs, you know, and things that we thought were true, to look at and examine, you know, that possibility. Now, in your book, you also spend some time talking about Planet X, you know, the UK conspiracy theorist David Mead wrote about Planet X hitting us in October. So do I need to make Christmas plans or Thanksgiving plans?
Well, you know, this UK conspiracy theorist author wrote a book recently, which has been, you know, doing very well. His name is David Mead, and he wrote that Planet X is going to hit the Earth this October. And I don't buy it. No, it's not going to. It's been traveling, I believe, through our solar system for maybe millions of years, and it doesn't get that close, but at times it gets a little closer where it can actually affect the earthquakes, the faults of our planet, and volcanoes, Volcanoes. There we go. Because its magnetic pull is that strong. And I think that with the Earth and the Sun right now, there's that magnetic pull. And it's very strange right now. The Sun is not doing too much. It seems to be kind of quiet. It's been flatlining. It's gotten a little active lately, and I think it's going to get more active. But I believe that these Earth changes we're seeing now, the mysterious booms heard all over the Earth, and the strange the sinkholes that are forming all over.
Oh, yeah.
Sinkholes all over the place. There are earthquakes, stronger earthquakes, more earthquakes in places that have never had earthquakes. And we're also seeing volcanoes that are getting very, very active. So there's some strange things going on. And I think that eventually something is going to happen, that maybe our Earth will shift. It might be a geomagnetic shift. It might be a polar shift, an axis shift. But I think that there is something coming up. And I know that there are other people out there that have been predicting it, like Nancy Leader of Zeta Talk. Do you know about Nancy?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, of course, she's been wrong on many times. She says Zetas have told her that, I think in 2003, that the Earth was going to shift and, you know, get ready and go to your caves and whatever you have to do. And nothing happened, of course. So, you know, we've heard so many doom and gloom and, you know, apocalyptic things since who knows when, and they don't happen.
Yeah, there's that one preacher that had it, and he posted it, and it didn't happen. Then he delayed it a couple more months, it didn't happen. So it's like, but, you know, I just wanted to mention that the Planet X that he was talking about is also called by some Nibiru, and the Planet Nine, too, correct? I mean, because there have been discussions about Planet Nine as well. Okay.
Well, what's really interesting, Robert, that two Caltech scientists at the first of last year told us that they had found Planet X, and they didn't say Planet Nine at the time. They were actually saying Planet X. So they did find it, and then it was kind of, you know, with NASA and everything, they kind of tried to put the brakes on that.
Kibosh.
Yes, they did. They did. And but I believe it's out there. And if two Caltech scientists said it, then I have to believe it is there.
Yeah, I would go with them too. And, you know, and the idea of it crashing into Earth, I agree with you, that's very far-fetched.
No.
But, you know, if it does exist and that it comes, you know, well within, you know, our solar system, kind of comes out from the darkness of the solar system, I could see, because it's got huge mass, that it could really disrupt Earth activities, you know. And that in itself, I mean if we just even look at, you know, the glacier melt, you know, and the sea level rise, I mean, that in itself, I mean, you're giving the Earth, you know, I mean, the proportion of water to ice, you know, is shifting. So, I mean, you know, the Earth is going to react. I mean, it's kind of like a little gyroscope, you know. You know, you kind of melt there in the, you know, Antarctica, raise the sea level, then we're going to kind of go up a little bit north, or, you know what I mean? So it seems that even climate change you know, the glacier melt, you know, could also indicate some ominous geographic stuff for us.
I think so, absolutely. We know that the poles are starting to melt big time, and the poor polar bears, they're not having enough ice glaciers to stay on. There's just nothing there. No. Everything is changing.
Yeah, it's so sad. Yeah. Now, you also, I mean, like you said in the beginning of the show, you cover a wide range of topics. So also in the book, you talk about Native Americans linked to what they call star beings or star people. So, you know, first of all, why do you think they contact the Native Americans? Is it because of the Earth, the connection to the Earth? And you know, what kind of warnings have they received, the Native Americans received from these folks?
Well, supposedly they have been in contact with star beings, but they, what we call aliens and they call star beings, for maybe hundreds, maybe thousands of years, and they don't fear them at all. They have known about them. The Native Americans down in the Southwest have talked about them, even when the Phoenix sighting took place in 1997. They were laughing at all of us because they've seen them for so long. They thought we're all crazy, you know, that everybody saw these incredible UFOs over Phoenix, Arizona, the Phoenix lights. But they've known about them. And one author, I don't know if you've talked to her, but Artie Sixkiller Clark has written about this. She's gone all the way to South America and through the West and Southwest to talk to Native Americans, and they talk about their incredible messages that they've been given, prophetic messages from these star beings on what's going to happen. And they say that because they're closer to nature, that that's why they're contacted, that they honor the earth, you know, not like we do, and we're closer to the earth. But they're saying that a great catastrophe is going to happen to earth. There's going to be a shift of the earth. And many, many, there's another book that's very good, Grandmothers Counsel the World by Carol Schaefer. And many of these grandmothers came from all over the world in, I believe it was 2003, and talked about these beings that have told them these things. They say that we can actually make, lessen the earth changes if we start to honor Mother Earth and care about Mother Earth. And look what we're doing to Mother Earth. She's a sentient being. She's alive, and we're just destroying her. And that's, you know, that's what they're trying to tell us. You know, wake up before we destroy the earth and ourselves, which we're seemingly doing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it's, if you just look at the impacts and the increase of extinction of various species, both plant and animal, all of those kinds of things are, you know, the canary in the coal mine kind of warning, you know, for us to kind of take heed. Now, in your book, you also do some predictions for 2017. So maybe you could share a little bit of what 2017 and how it relates to 70?
Well, I see it's going to be kind of a chaotic year. There's going to be some good things, but there's going to be a lot of bad things going on. We're already seeing that we could be in World War III very soon if certain things happen. And, you know, everything is escalating. It's getting worse. So I'm asking people, you know, I believe thoughts are things, and they're just as powerful as numbers. It's vibration again, and positive vibration for the earth, and peace is really powerful. Yeah. I think we can change that vibration. But we are headed that way. We are headed for maybe a civil war. We're headed for a world war. It's going to be like a religious war with what's going on with ISIS and Christians. It's powerful what's going on. And it could be North Korea, could be Syria, could be Russia. Iran now is jumping in there and saying that they're with Russia right now and they're going to take action against us if we do anything more in Syria. So it's very scary.
It is. You know, I mean, that's one I don't really want to, you know, buy into the fear of it. Now, you know, it's something that can really elicit fear. It's easy to do. It's easy to fall into, especially if you try and, you know, stay current and listen to some of the pundits and all of their stuff, you know.
Like InfoWars.
You know, my favorite place. It's crazy. But then again, you know, the bluster and the ego seems to, you know, if it's not put in check, it really could lead to some, you know, really catastrophic. And, you know, and if that happens, you know, some may say that it's, I mean, first of all, it would be one of those you know, pivotal event, you know, and but also I think people are going to that in itself would raise awareness. I mean, you know, when it came time to Trump being elected, you know, a lot of my friends were like, oh my God, shocked, you know, dismayed, blah blah blah. But my thought was is that what it does is it really kind of highlights awareness of this particular style, this particular, mm-hmm. you know, kind of thinking. Once awareness is raised, then action can take place. And until, you know, people are motivated by emotion, you know, motivated by emotion into action. And I think, you know, that that election and some of the decisions that are happening right now are going to be very, it can raise the emotions of the U.S. as well as the world.
Right. Well, you know, sometimes disasters and horrible things bring about positive results. People actually come together, and look how divided we are. Worldwide, we're divided, and we haven't come together for a long time. We've forgotten about prayer. We forgot about the energy of prayer and everything that we're doing right now. We're pouring into the earth all the negativity. We're causing a lot of these earthquakes ourselves because of our negativity. And I believe that if we do come together, if we start to unite and to change things in our world, we can stop disasters. We can stop many, many things, you know, in the future.
Yeah.
Because the future is not, it's forming right now. But I see the future, the past, the present, and the future as all one. We're kind of like on a river, and the past is behind us, right? But it's still there, right? And up ahead is the future, and there's many tributaries that we can take. And, you know, we have a choice. We have free will. We can take any of those tributaries and change the course of events that are look like are going to be destined to happen. So it's up to us to change everything. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Native Americans say, too.
Yeah, we can head toward the rapids if we want, but we can also go to that serene pool off to the side if we want. Right. Now, we're kind of getting down toward the end of the show, so there's just a couple more topics I want to talk about. One of them is time travel. Now, you know, lately there's been on TV a lot of shows that really focus on time travel. I mean, there's Time After Time, there's Frequency, and there's another one that I watch. Yeah, Timeless, exactly. So it's just interesting because I've always been interested in it, but I don't ever remember there being such a you know, significant, you know, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, number of shows that deal with that topic. So, first of all, do you believe in that? And do you think that we're maybe kind of edging our way toward that experience?
I do, absolutely, Robert. I believe that it's going to be invented time. I think that our scientists have been working on it for a long time. I think CERN is involved in creating a time machine. And I think they've been working on that for a long time. In fact, John Titor, if he was real, who appeared in a blog in 2000 and claimed to be a time traveler from the year 2036, he said that in his timeline, in his parallel world, that time travel was invented in 2034 by CERN. Mm. And they're working on it now, which is interesting. But our scientists right now know that time is malleable. It's not predictable. They have done many experiments, one called time dilation, and in special relativity, and they have found that time goes slower when you climb higher in a plane or any kind, even, you know, if you put a clock up higher, it'll go slower. Time is very strange. It's just, I don't know what fraction of a second. I don't remember that, but I know that that's one of the experiments that they've done. And then there's the double slit experiment. So there's other things. But I think that time is, we're going to find out more about time. It's going to be incredible, you know, in the future what we're going to learn. And I do think that there are time travelers, absolutely.
Yeah.
And maybe they're changing our world.
That could be, yeah, either preventing or creating some of those those
exactly.
pivotal moments.
Sure.
And then one last question. Since we've been talking about the number 7, and on our last show we talked about the number 13, do you think there is a greatest number or vibration for our universe?
Okay. Oh, yes. And that's the love vibration. It's the greatest vibration. It equals number 9. And it is the essence of God, and it's infinity. And number 9 also means eternity, faith, universal spiritual laws, the concept of karma, spiritual enlightenment, spiritual awakening, service to humanity, light working. So it's like the perfect number. It's so love is the greatest vibration of the universe.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's one more thing I just wanted to mention. You know, you were talking way back about the number 8, and my partner Roy, when he does readings and he gets the number 888, to him it indicates a Palladian existence. And he's probably for the last 15 years, he's had maybe a dozen, maybe even close to 24 people where that has come through. And so he mentions what it is and the just the whole, earthly existence, versus, a Palladian existence. And every single one of them agreed that they believe it, that made sense to them. I was just, because you mentioned 8 is kind of, with the Chinese and that kind of thing. But, yeah, that's just one of those, strange kinds of, symbols,
Robert,
that he gets when.
Wow. You arrive at that, Robert. How does he use numerology, or is it just astrology?
No.
Or?
No. We know numerology because we did our prophecy board with the oracle that has astrology, numerology, and tarot in it. So we know numerology, but it when it first happened, it was almost like a direct connect. 888 Palladian. It was like, that was just basically it. And so and ever since then, whenever he's gotten that kind of information, and everybody concurs that it's it. So it was just odd, this
there
is one
you
of those
go.
Again, a universal connection to 8, numerology in the galaxy. So
it's good and it's bad. And look at Bernie Sanders. He was born on September 8th. Now, what happened to him, Bernie? Poor Bernie.
I know. My buddy. Oh, wow. So,
yeah.
I mean, He has some great ideas. And, he really does. Yeah, and he really does express the feeling of many people. I mean, there's a social consciousness with him that, we sorely need, a consciousness and a compassion that we really need to have in the country.
It's interesting. I predicted Trump would win 6 months before I had a vision of it, but I also use numerology, and I use numerology to look at both Hillary Clinton and Bernie, and I just didn't see them becoming president at all. So it did play a big part in them. Exactly.
History has different intentions for us, but.
Betsy,
I really enjoyed speaking with you today. Thank you very much.
You too. Thank you, Robert.
We'll have to do this again. We can do it again before you have another book, but, certainly whenever you have books, we can do that. So, again, I appreciate it.
Well, sounds great. Thanks so much.
I just want to let people know that you're on social media, too, so people can join you there. I know we're connected there, and I really enjoy our connection, so they can join you there as well.
Can I say one last thing? For those listening, I'm going to be on Coast to Coast tomorrow night with George Story.
Oh, wow.
So they can tune in and hear me talk. I'll be in the second half, and they can just go to Coast to Coast AM and find out more. They probably will know. Usually it's on AM radio. So thank you.
Yep.
Thank you again, Robert.
Sure. I'll let all my peeps know about that.
Thanks.
Okay. Okay, again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Betsy Lewis, and we've been talking about her new book, Mystic Revelations of 7, Sacred Numerology. Again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is betsylewis.com. And again, I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.